All right, guys, welcome back to Shakedown Shan this week. Again, apologies for the delay. Had some technical difficulties. I didn't have my charger for my computer and had it run to me. So it's been an interesting morning, but here we are. So while I'm waiting for my computer to stop updating, because I just plugged it back in, I do luckily have some paper notes written down here. Good thing I did that instead of relying on technology, right? Anyway, this week has been pretty good. Hope you all have been doing something productive. Let's see, what did I do this week? I went to a graduation yesterday, which will play into one of the topics that we might have time for today about women versus men in the workforce and the education field, and how women are kind of overpowering the amount of men in the workforce and getting degrees. So let me just pull up all these tabs of all these good things that we have to talk about. But anyway, I went to a graduation for my best friend yesterday out in Oneonta. She graduated from Hartwick College with a bachelor's degree in psychology. While I was sitting there, I made a very quiet comment that I've never seen so much debt in one area. It was a good graduation, besides the fact that it was raining and cold and wet and boring and long. And I mean, I think we're there to watch people get their diplomas and graduate, not talk to or not listen to a whole bunch of people talk about stuff that nobody's going to remember, unfortunately. But I do appreciate the time that these people took out of their day to come and speak at the graduation, even though everyone was half asleep. So anyway, one of the topics that I do have for today, like I said, is women and men and the ratio of them in the workforce. And I'm still trying to pull this up for you guys. I'm really sorry. I relied on technology today. But one of my followers here on Facebook, a follower of the show, suggested I talk about it. And he gave me a really good link to look at. And so I want to do that. While I'm trying to pull that up, though, I'm going to mention that you listen to the Freecast podcast, and it has to do with the Free State Project and New Hampshire, and you guys should all look into that and let me know what you think of it. I think their show is pretty good. All right, we're almost to the content here. I hope the live video is working all right for you guys. My phone was just, like, being really super weird and, like, flashing at me, and it's still flashing at me. I don't know why. But I think it shows that I'm live here. Don't forget that you can call in and ask questions and talk as well. Alright, post. So many memes. And do. It's being super, super slow. Apologize. Almost there. Almost there. So, anyway. Some other things we have on the agenda today is wrongful convictions, CPS, and family court. And I was going to talk about LoveGov videos, but I didn't get a chance to watch them yet this week, but they sound pretty funny. It's a series of videos put out that portray the federal government as an overbearing boyfriend. Sounds hilarious, but I haven't got a chance to watch them yet. So if you guys get a chance to watch them, tell me about them. Ooh, more people. So I'm still trying to pull this up. And I do apologize. It's not what I wanted. All right. Here we go. So I do have a really, really great listener that likes to send me great content. Okay. So more working women than men have college degrees. And so this is what we're going to get started on. So this, where does this comes from? The United States Census Bureau. And so I'm going to read you a little bit of information here. Among the employed population, 25 and older, 37% of women had attained a bachelor's degree or more as of 2010, compared with 35% of men, according to new data from the U.S. Census Bureau. In contrast, among all adults 25 and older, 29.6% of women and 30.3% of men had at least a bachelor's degree. The data came from the Educational Attainment in the United States from 2010, and not only examine gender differences in attainment, but also provide the most detailed information on years of school completed ever present by the Census Bureau, showing for each level of attainment exactly how many years of education these adults have. All right. So in 2010, 87% of adults 25 and older had at least a high school diploma or equivalent, up from 84% in 2000. Of the 200 million people 25 and older, 26 million had not completed high school, while 174 million had attained at least a high school education. In 2010, 30% of adults 25 and older, or 60 million people, had at least a bachelor's degree, compared with 26% in 2000. More than half of 52% of Asians 25 and older had a bachelor's degree or more, higher than the level of for non-Hispanic whites, 33%, blacks, 20%, and Hispanics, 14%. Women 25 and older were more likely than men 25 and older to have completed at least high school at 87.6% versus 86.6%, so 1% difference. Among the population 25 to 29, 36% of women had a bachelor's degree or more than men. 30% of foreign-born residents of the U.S. had a high school diploma, compared with 10% of native-born residents. 19% of naturalized citizens had less than a high school diploma. At the same time, 29% of the foreign-born population had a bachelor's degree or higher degree, compared with 30% of the native-born population. So these are just a whole bunch of numbers I'm throwing at you here. But we're showing that the amount of women obtaining a bachelor's degree or higher and entering the workforce is rising, whereas the amount of men obtaining these degrees and entering the workforce with them are decreasing. And so that makes you really look at this push that we have to push women into fields. And it kind of doesn't really make sense to me that we keep saying that there's like an unfair percentage of women in these fields and that we need to keep helping them, because it seems like the women going out for higher education and these fields of work is growing rather than diminishing. So if it's growing, why do we need to keep pushing them out there? I don't know if you've ever seen like nursing schools, it's mainly all women. We have like women seem to be okay with these fields completely dominated by themselves, but as soon as you see a field of education where it's just mainly men, they seem to have to infiltrate and say they're being treated unfairly in that field. I mean, the numbers are showing that the amount of women going for higher education and into fields with these degrees is growing rather than decreasing. And I think anyway we should be telling or helping everybody go into these fields, not like financially obviously, but like encouraging if they want to go into it, not just saying, oh, if you're a woman and you want to go in this field, you should definitely do it. Or if you're a male, you should go in this field, or you want to go in this field, you should definitely do it. I think just anybody, if they want to go into that field, go ahead, go for it. But it's definitely, you see women trying to infiltrate every single field possible, and, you don't see them advocating for men to go into mainly woman-run fields, like nursing. And that brings up the graduation that I went to yesterday. I think I saw so many more females graduating than I did males. And I think that seems to be a commonplace now. Whereas women are still saying that men are advancing faster than they are. And that brings in the wage gap topic, but I'm not going to bring that up today. But I just don't feel like there's really that much inequality as people think there is. So that's good stuff to look at. And let's see, female entrepreneurship. What else do we have here?
One of the things that, you know, when you talked about women getting in the field, I think you also hear them say that they're underpaid. Mm-hmm. And our lieutenant governor is a female, and her last report last year said that they're about 95% equal. So it's not as bad, and she said it gets better every year. So it's not as bad as women make it out to be.
No, like I said last week, we're in this society now where people are really just very, very equal. I mean, there is certain aspects of sexism and racism that do still exist. But for the most part, we are not living in those times where women are suppressed anymore, and where race matters anymore. I mean, you can see it, and I'm not gonna say it doesn't exist, because that would be very naive. But I don't think it's that bad anymore. And really, it's just the media portrays these issues to be bad and to be a huge issue, and we play into that. And really, they are the ones that keep this problem growing and growing and growing, as it seems, but it's really not. And they really kind of depends on what they're saying to us, that the people, I'm sorry, I'm distracted. So let me backtrack. So the media portrays these issues to be real and prevalent in society, whereas they're really not. We have bigger issues to worry about. And I think these issues have been fading away as time goes on. And it's not really something that we should really be worrying about or trying to fix. There's not really anything to fix. I mean, wages are coming up between the genders. It's going to level out eventually. And I really don't think people are out here saying, no, you can't do this job because you're a woman. You're going to have individual cases, obviously, but I don't think that these are huge problems that we should be worrying about. And let's see here. So I did want to go on to wrongful convictions. I read a very interesting story about a Missouri murder that happened, and so there was this murder that took place in 2001 in Missouri. A woman was shot in her car. They suspected during a drug deal, but so this woman was shot, and they brought in this guy named David Robinson to trial. He was not, I don't even know how he got there, why they suspected him to be the murderer, but they brought this guy in with no evidence, no physical evidence connecting him to the murder at all, and he was convicted of the murder and got sentenced to life in prison. And so there was one witness. They had one witness, air quotes around witness, that came in and said he saw him with that lady that night. Comes to find out years down the road, this witness was paid $2,500 in cash to go in and say this. And this was the only evidence that they had against him. So anyway, this guy's been sitting in jail behind bars. And I think it says, okay, in 2009, the real murderer came out and admitted to it. So you got this guy that's been in jail for 8 years. And they convicted him of it. And he knows he's innocent. And even the daughter of the lady that was killed says that she believes in his innocence. And his whole family believes that he's innocent. And so then 8 years later, the real murderer came out. And before he could be put on trial, he committed suicide. And then, here's the crazy part. They still left this guy in prison. Because they never had a trial with the real murderer that admitted to it. And so, you got admission of somebody else. Guilt. Yeah, of guilt from somebody else that proves this guy's innocent. Really. And there was no physical evidence either way to lock him up, which I didn't think was legal to do. So then that was in 2009. So they brought this case last February to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court ruled there was no evidence that Robinson committed the murder and the ruling should be overturned. And the lead detective of the case originally used unreliable evidence and ignored and suppressed facts that he pointed away from him. So that whoever the lead detective of this case was really just wanted to have somebody locked up. Didn't matter who, but they needed to have somebody so they could say case closed, probably look good for their numbers, their quota, whatever. And then they wouldn't have to actually find the real person, which is kind of scary in a way because that the real murderer is out there loose. So anyway, the Supreme Court said that the ruling should be overturned. They did not. I mean, the Supreme Court, most people think that they are like the law of the land. And, but really, they don't, it's hard to explain and to put into words, but they really just set precedents. Like when it comes to their rulings, they don't have the power really that you think that they have to force somebody to do something. They just set the precedent. They say this is what should be done. But then this other court that has control over this case gets the final say, really, because it was their case. They decide to keep him in jail. Well, in prison. Yeah, exactly. So they were given till May this year, the end of May this year, to bring him back on trial and prove if he was innocent or guilty. And they waited till I think it was May 14th they brought him back out. And I haven't looked into it since then, but I really don't have to because we all know that, I mean, anyone who's looked into this case knows that this guy's innocent. So anyway, Robinson, he had no ties to the murder. He did have prior drug charges unrelated to the murder and unrelated to the lady. He just happened to live in the same town. He had prior drug charges. They were nonviolent. They were just for possession. And anyway, I feel like that's what maybe they felt like they could try to connect to the case with. But either way, it's still not valid evidence. It's not proof that he was there. It's not, but his DNA is not found anywhere. So the state had until the state of Missouri had until the end of May to retrial or free him, and they waited until 5/14, May 15th, to do this. Let's see. So I guess I'm not too familiar with Missouri law, but Missouri law, if you're facing life in prison but not on death row, actual innocence does not give you a habeas. And that's kind of scary. They can just lock anybody up. As long as you're not on death row, you're just in there for life in prison or whatever, or a certain sentencing. There's no rush to prove that maybe you are innocent, which is absolutely ridiculous. This guy's been in here since 2001. So how long is that? 7 years, 17 years. 17 years. They ruin his life with this. Ruin an innocent man's life. He's been in there. He hasn't been in the outside world. He hasn't seen his children, his family, his mother in so long. This guy's been in there with people that actually have done violent crimes, and it's just scary to think that they make him waste his life there.
What's his attorney? What did he say? Did he have an attorney that? I know after a while you run out of money. If you don't have money, you get a.
I think he probably had a public defender. I'm not really sure. Let's see. David Robinson. Let's see if we can find his ruling recently. May 14th ruling. Maybe. Let's see. He was freed. They freed him on the 14th.
They did.
So there's a picture of him here hugging his mom. And it's kind of awesome. He's so happy to be out. So let's see. So nearly 18 years of being incarcerated for a murder he did not commit. His exoneration, which began May 1st, was completed the Monday after some fierce legal wrangling. The Department of Corrections relented his position. Oh, where'd it go? Temporarily argued the Supreme Court had ordered Robertson to be held for 30 days or for there to be a retrial, which they did. They said it should be overturned and that they needed to retrial him. So let's see here. Is there anything else? It was the first time since 2000 that Missouri's prosecutors were admit there's no case against Robertson for the murder. So it's kind of scary that we trust this law enforcement that everyone seems to love so much to do the right thing. But I mean, this probably happens a lot. I mean, there's not just one case. I bet there's a lot of innocent people.
Yeah.
That are locked up, and that's scary. And I hear a lot of people argue, well, it's better to get it wrong sometimes than to not get it right at all. But even then, it's really not. You're taking somebody's life, their liberty, their freedom away. And the person that should be locked up for murder is out on the streets anyway. So it doesn't change anything.
And I'll bet you the amount of life that fellow lost in prison, if he did come out and try to lead a normal life, he probably could never lead a normal life again.
No. People are going to know him about this trial. That's going to be his entire life is going to be this. So right. You're the guy
and
that was
prison
locked up.
Changes a person, especially.
It does. Let's see what else they say here. An evaluation of the evidence. No. Well, Missouri needs to do this a little bit better. But I saw that the other day, and I wanted to talk to you guys about it because it was interesting and reinforces my thought on our law enforcement and court systems. Speaking of court systems, I do have something here about, let's get to this post. Sorry, I'm still trying. I don't have all my tabs up. I did have something here for you on family court, and I was going to get into CPS and all that good stuff. So anyway, CPS is...
Department of Public Service.
It is. Yeah, it's the Child Protective Services. I don't agree with them. I think the intent of instilling CPS were good, but just in theory it doesn't work because it's all corrupt. Government systems are always filled with corruption. And let's see here, I had a really, really good thing pulled up on my phone, but I don't think I can do that due to being on Facebook Live. Okay, let's see. Okay, here it is. So let's get into Child Protective Services, and then maybe if I can find the Family Court article, we'll get into that. And again, I apologize. I meant to have everything pulled up, so this show is going to be kind of rocky. But anyway, Child Protective Services, this is an article or a post written by somebody here. It's very long and insightful, and I like it, but... I'm going to read through some of it with you. She goes, "Now, if there was ever an oxymoron to this so-called agency, it would have to be at the top of the list. CPS was originally established in 1974, and its main purpose was to study and investigate possible incidents of reported child abuse. After conducting a thorough and complete investigation, the agency was to determine whether or not the abuse was actual or unsubstantiated. If the abuse was actual, then the agency was to report the same to the appropriate legal authorities and then aid the legal authorities in providing recommendations for resolving the incidents, such as providing counseling, follow-up reviews, and, in the most severe cases, the removal of the child from the home and placing them either with the relatives as the first line of protection or as a last resort into foster care. Over the past few decades, however, CPS has transformed itself into being the biggest and deadliest perpetrator of child abuse this nation has ever encountered. How do they get away with it? Simply put, the agency has virtually no accountability for any of its actions whatsoever." So CPS looks into reported cases of supposed child abuse. But, I mean, what... You have to look at what they deem child abuse. Because most of the time, their classification of child abuse is not actually abuse. No. I know a case where somebody that I know, their son, their like 8-year-old son or whatever, was swearing. And to discourage that, put a drop of hot sauce on his tongue. And I mean, that's better than the classical example of soap, because soap is chemicals. At least hot sauce is edible. It's meant to be eaten. Just a drop of, and it wasn't like spicy, super hot. It was just mild hot sauce. Put a drop of it on their tongue. And they didn't like hot sauce. And so then this kid went to school and was telling the teacher about it. And, of course, teachers are mandated reporters. Mm-hmm. And so they had to report it. CPS gets involved. There's this whole case. And it throws chaos and unnecessary stress into people's lives over this way this person decided to parent an issue. And really, who are you to tell a parent what they can and cannot do with their child as long as they're not actually abusing them? And, like, there's a fine line between discipline and abuse. I mean, I'm a non-aggression person. I don't like spanking or anything like that, but, some people do. And I mean, there's a line of that. Mm-hmm. I was always threatened with a spoon. You could get the wooden spoon. But guess what? I didn't want to get hit with the wooden spoon, so I never did anything to get hit with the wooden spoon.
Well, you know, in New York, they say that the Child Protection Service Acts are against civil rights. They're breaking civil rights laws, constitutional rights, and there's so much corruption. Caseworkers are giving false information in court that they want an investigation. And I just wonder if there will ever be an investigation, knowing the levels of corruption from the judges and down to the caseworker. You know, the attorneys are involved, and you know, they manipulate facts to make the parents look bad.
Yeah, so they do. They exclude things. Right. They exclude important information. It's like when you're citing a story or a source in an English paper, you can take certain parts of that source out of its context and put it into your report on it to make it, it could be completely against your point that you're trying to argue, and you can take that source and quote it certain, cite it different ways to make it sound like it's working for you.
Right.
That is supporting
you. You're right. This article says that even attorneys that represent their clients will give information that help incriminate the parents. That's your attorney. But like you said, he's manipulating the information, and it harms his clients. So there's all levels of corruption in that area. And like you said, I think here again, it invades our civil rights to not let parents bring up their children the way how they want see fit. To.
Yes. And so you get into this debate about, okay, so who has the right to take a child from a home? Who has that right? Like who, if there's a, okay, so on this, thing I have pulled up here on this this report, I have an instance where this girl, a 7-year-old girl, was sitting in her classroom, and she had gum stuck in her hair. Her teacher noticed and asked the girl about the gum. She said her mom gave her a piece of gum after dinner, and she fell asleep with it, and it must have got stuck in her hair. She didn't want to tell her mom because she didn't want to get mad. She didn't want her mom to get mad. You know how kids are. You know, you break the vase, you try to hide the vase because you don't want to get mad. Sure. It's not that you're going to, like, get beat for it, but, like, you're scared. You're like, oh, no, like, this seems so bad. I don't want to get in trouble. You want to look like the innocent little angel. And so she didn't want to tell her mom she got gum in her hair. And I've had an instance like that where I got gum in my hair and I didn't want to tell my grandma because I didn't want her to get upset. So that's just how kids view things. They don't want to get in trouble. And so anyway, the teacher sent the child to the counselor to report the incident, and then that same afternoon, two CPS agents and police officers showed up at the girl's home. The CPS agents stated they were there to investigate the mother because the daughter was fearful of her and the mother and what the mother would do to her. The mother at that point naturally had no idea what was going on. She questioned, however, she was questioned on why her daughter was so fearful of her, and the little girl was present for this questioning, and after watching her mother being hounded by the CPS agents, looked at her mom and said, "Mommy's a bad person." One of the agents pulled the little girl into her arms and said, "Don't worry, we're here to protect you." And at some point, the father came home during the interrogation and the CPS agents ended with giving him an ultimatum between either having them take the child into protective care or having the mother leave the home until she could be fully investigated. Bewildered, the mother left the home, and it took 30 days for the investigation report to come back, stating the mother could now return to the home, but CPS would keep an eye on her. At no point was the gum issue ever brought up by the CPS agents. So these agents come in and just create chaos in this family over gum in this girl's hair. They completely, they misinterpreted what the child said, and then come there and like scare the child. And because she's being interrogated by CPS, makes the child think that her mom is bad. And so this child's scared, doesn't know what's going on. There's these official-looking people at her house. Her mom's being questioned. And so, of course, she's going to think her mom is bad because it looks bad. But really, there's nothing going on in this home. And the father comes home all confused. And so then this mom is forced to leave her house for 30 days for an investigation that came out to nothing. It's a waste of time, waste of taxpayer dollars.
Yeah.
And just that now this CPS agency is forever in this family's life.
Well, you know, there was a show on TV called Children Say the Darndest Things. And children say things that they think are funny, but they're not. And you really can't understand what a child is saying, because they may think what they're saying is funny. So you have to be more receptive to trying to understand what the child is saying and not take it as basic fact. And what this what these child protective services end up doing if they do take the child away, they would rather put them in foster homes than with relatives.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been cases where children have actually died at the hands of a foster parent, being
abusive.
Worse than the,
yeah.
And instead of placing them with a family member. And I don't know, it just, the whole thing needs to be investigated and maybe their parameters changed.
And not to mention that foster care is state-run. Government run. It's and we all know government programs, government run institutions are not effective, and they don't improve at all. And there's a little like investigation or like auditing to the state run institutions.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have here. It says what's in it for CPS. And so for every child CPS removes from the home and places into foster care, the federal government pays that local agency
$30,000.
$30,000 for every child they place into foster care. So, of course, there's incentive to find something wrong in that family for reasons to take children away.
Sure.
And it's not right. And so they you end up wondering why we have so many issues with youth. Well, foster care has gone up in numbers. The amount of children removed from homes have gone up in numbers. You're taking them away from families that actually had nothing bad going on and putting them into these foster care families where it's worse than where they were before.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to look at problems with the youth, maybe you should start looking into foster care a little, because a lot of the problems come from kids in foster care. And let's see, what else do they have here? In addition, the parents are charged for the financial care of the child. If the child is handicapped, depending on the kind of handicap, the amount increases to between $40,000 and $150,000 per child. And then if the child is adopted by a new family, an additional $4,000 bonus is given, or $6,000, between $4,000 and $6,000, for adoption of a special needs child. The CPS agent who physically removes a child is given a commission from the government's fund. The more kids removed, the more commission, the bigger the personal finance gain. On the other hand, if a child is allowed to remain in the home or is returned to the parental home, the CPS agency and agent receives nothing. Agents are therefore encouraged to remove children and help generate more funding for the agency. Sounds like a whole lot of corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. In November 2007, Georgia State Senator Nancy Schaefer published a report on CPS entitled The Corrupt Business of Child Protective Services. Senator Schaefer's report found, among other things, that CPS issued unfair judgment on families without compassion and imposed unreasonable and impossible demands on the families that separated families and greatly stressed parents. Law enforcement agencies routinely ignore complaints made against CPS. CPS received extra funding for moving children, fraud, fabrication, withholding, and destroying of evidence, unnecessary termination of parental rights, and then citing confidentiality clause to protect themselves. CPS gives kickbacks to employees, lawyers, court investigators, guardians, and judges, psychologists, psychiatrists, counselors, caseworkers, foster parents, and others. CPS often interprets parental cooperation as an admittance of guilt. Parents are treated as criminals and children are in more danger in CPS care than in their own homes. In fact, case studies reveal children in the care of CPS are 600% more likely to die a violent death. So tell me who is the real abuser here. And I just had something in my head and I lost it. Let me backtrack here. Let's see. Oh, so also children can report their parents and CPS will take it as fact. Like you were saying, you have to interpret correctly, try to interpret correctly what the children are saying. You get mad at your parents. You can literally just call these people and make stuff up and they come, they take you away and investigate. Meanwhile, you were really just getting in trouble for something and you didn't want to get in trouble. And it's not even like you were being abused or anything, but you're just angry. And so you start making up lies. I've seen it more times often than not that kids do this. And it's just, it's scary that parents are now being fearful of their children, fear of doing something that might, that they might be able to escalate as harm. You know, kids can go into school and say all sorts of things. And like I said, the teachers being mandated reporters, they have to say something. So that also brings up the fact that teachers are mandated reporters. I don't think that's right. It's not a teacher's job to be involved in the home life of a student. I mean, I think it's good to care about your students. Mm-hmm. And like if they have a problem or something that they know they can come to you. But I don't think it should be mandated that if a teacher hears something that they have to get involved. It should be up to you. If you feel like it's an issue, like if something's violence going on with a child, you morally should just anyway want to tell somebody.
Right.
But to have to mandate that you report every tiny little thing, no matter how big or small it is, whether it's violent or not, is absolutely ridiculous.
Well, your child may be riding a bike over the weekend, fall, get a bruise.
Yep.
And
you have to
report that. And the child that day could be upset with, let's say, the mother or father.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody gets them in a corner and starts interrogating them. And they're going to say, oh, maybe my mommy did this, you know, and then that's all. That's
yes,
all
because they
need.
Get in their head with reverse psychology, too.
Right. Right.
And
that's
it's
all you need.
Yep.
And you start out as a little riding bike accident into a full-blown taking the child away. And like you said, having a 30-day report. It's crazy.
And along with CPS, we also have corruption in family court. I did have a thing that I'm still trying to find here about father's rights in family court. And let's see. I thought it was on this post. Where is it? I'm not sure how many people here are familiar with the family court system, but another thing that I'm familiar with is that the law guardians of the children involved in family court listen to the wishes and desires of the child more than they should. So you get a small child in here, maybe like five or something, and their parents are going through a split up or something, or there's a custody battle going on for some reason. And they're in there and they're talking to the child, and the child has a completely jaded, not correct view of what's going on. And so these law guardians listen to what the child wants, but the child doesn't really, I'm not saying they don't always know what's best for them. It's definitely by individual case. But more often than not, these law guardians listen to the children and what they think is right. And it's I don't think that should be the basis of the verdict of a custody battle. Maybe that the child's going to tell you what is more, what has more advantage to them. So maybe this parent does so many fun things with me, I want to be with them. Whereas maybe they're not the best fit parent. I mean, who's to say who the best fit parent of a child is,
right?
Really? And you know, courts try to go for the mother almost all the time to have the most custody of the child, because naturally children do better if they're going to have one parent with their mothers than they would with their fathers, because in nature the mother's the loving, nurturing person that's going to parent the child. But that's not the case every single time, and I don't feel like courts should always push the mother's rights all the time. What about the father's rights? There are a lot of great fathers in the world.
That's right.
And I did find what I was looking for. It's about father's rights in Kentucky. Judges are saying presumed shared parenting and child custody battles. Okay, so let's see here. In June, Kentucky will become the first state to require a presumption of equally shared parenting in child custody cases, even when one or more parent is opposed. So, what?
I say that's good.
Good. I feel like if one parent isn't going or doesn't want to be involved at all, this court ruling's not going to make them.
Oh, that, okay, I see what you're saying. I thought that it meant that they would both go in as equal sides, having the same rights, instead of the woman having the same. But you're saying if one parent wants to give up their rights, then maybe I misunderstood the law.
Let's see here. Kentucky's presumption will apply even without divorcing parents on board. Judges must presume joint custody and equally shared parenting time is in the best interest of the child. Yes, so it is what you were saying. In almost all divorce cases. So, yes, Kentucky is trying to presume. So, it goes either way. They're pushing presumption of shared parenting and child custody battle. So, that is really, really good when it comes to all these cases where you have the mother and father both capable of taking care of the parent. It can backfire, though, when the one side doesn't want anything to do with it anyway.
Right.
So that's not going to make them, you're going to give joint custody and then this child's going to go with that person half the time.
Right.
And they don't really want it anyway. But if they don't want to be there, they're not going to be there anyway. And joint custody is going to be ignored. But I do think it's good when it comes to these cases of both the parents being capable of taking care of the child.
Yeah.
And so father's rights definitely should be presumed in these cases.
Well, here's the thing. One attorney general in a state had said that another example of unfairness in many courts is if a woman goes into court and says, the father of my child or my boyfriend or my husband, and I have had a dispute and I feel threatened and unhappy, and I'm concerned about my safety, without really providing any specific details of the incident, she is awarded an order of protection without providing any details or proof. She's automatically given an order of protection. Now, what if you just go in to say that? The father has no rights. He can't say, I've never done that. I mean, you know,
right.
What proof does she have that I've done that? He's out on the outside looking in, trying to,
yeah,
you know, I mean.
And that brings up the no physical evidence thing, back to the murder case. These judges and detectives and prosecutors just keep pushing cases without evidence. Without evidence, our justice system, as much as people believe it to be true and just, is just corrupt. It's completely corrupt. It's based on how much you get paid for winning the case. It's based on all these payouts, all these incentives to get the court to rule a certain way. The judges themselves get paid whether a case goes a certain way or not. And it's filled with corruption. We need a restructuring of our justice system.
Well, the thing, you know, as I was reading this, it got me more infuriated, because it says the father, they'll schedule a hearing within 3 months. And the father could have to live outside the house, which he has to make arrangements on some place to live. Mm-hmm. He can't take anything out of the house with him. He could be deprived of all his personal possessions and from seeing his child. I don't understand this. It's, how did we get to this point?
Just because the mother is angry that their life didn't go a certain way.
Sure.
Not really sure how we got here, but it also has to go with what we were talking about earlier, how women have been advocating for more power and more power. And I mean, that's been coming. And we have power. I don't understand why people aren't viewing this. Like, I am a feminist, definitely. I support women's rights and everything. Mm-hmm. But it's we're not in the time where we can't vote anymore.
Right.
We're
most people today are respectful of women's rights.
And right.
Equal pay.
Yeah.
I mean, all men, I think, are going that way now. I mean, the old days are over, and I mean, we're equal. It may not be,
like I said, there's individual cases, but
right.
I mean, you're gonna have that no matter what.
That's right. And you know, I heard something this weekend, and I hope I can remember it right. It's about that school shooting in Florida. They asked someone who had children back in the 40s and 50s, and they said, what were the three things you worried most about your child in school? And they said, well, his ability to learn to read and write, that he didn't get hurt on the playground, and that he was respectful to the teachers. And then they asked the parent today what they worry about school the most, and they said, well, that their child learns, that he doesn't get shot in school, and I can't remember the other thing, but you look back how simple it was growing up to the 50s and 60s, from, you know, beginning of times up to then, in schools, and what children have to face today. It's, and what is that from? I mean,
yeah,
what's
like
created
what's the cause
this?
Of that?
What's the cause of that? Could it be some family problems, or I mean, does the child keep hearing negatives about women and things like that? You know, I mean, the world is changing, and I don't think for the better. Even though more and more laws are passed to protect women, and it's just, I don't know, it doesn't make sense. I can't make any sense out of it.
Yeah, I think maybe they could look into what's going on with the youth and everything. Maybe because these parents aren't allowed to parent, like we were talking about.
Exactly.
This whole CPS issue and the family court issue. These parents just can't parent. They're fearful of their children. They can't discipline them. There is no discipline. You have to be your child's best friend. And yes, I agree, it's good to be their best friend, but you also have to be a parent.
Yep.
But these parents just can't be parents anymore, and the state really is like parenting the children.
Well, I'll tell you, I went to Catholic school, and the nuns used to be able to crack you on the hand with a ruler if you weren't right. behaving. The prisons would be full of nuns today.
Yeah, right. I mean, they're not deemed criminals.
That's how, no, they're not. And that's how they dealt with things. I mean, punishment, you know. I don't know. I mean, but there weren't a lot of disrespectful people either.
Right.
And like, not just because of Catholic schools, but... you were able to discipline your child, and I think that's the most, you know, now we have one in the studio here that's a great guy, so a product of his mother.
I definitely believe in, like, non-aggression aspects to disciplining, but, you know, some kids, it doesn't work. Non-aggression doesn't work, and sometimes they need a little tap on the butt, like nothing big to hurt them,
right.
but just a little like, hello, what right. are you doing? I mean, I was brought up that way. My family was brought up that way, and just the removal of the parent's way to parent is detrimental to the development of the youth. And so these kids think they can get away with everything.
Mm-hmm.
So on the school shooting topic, there was a recent school shooting in Texas the other day, which I think we're going to talk about in the next episode. But these shootings are increasing, and I think it has to do with media and, like I said, the prescription drugs. But I haven't looked into the Texas shooting yet, and it's going to have to be something for next time.
And Samuel Jackson, the actor, had a blurb on Facebook, and it said that when he grew up in the South, he grew up around guns, and you respected
yeah,
the guns. And he said today he believes that the reason why there are these shootings is because parents don't take care of their children. And he blames it on the parents, not on the guns.
Mm-hmm.
So that
there's a lot of factors. There's a lot of factors, and maybe we'll dedicate a lot of the show next week into it. I think I'm going to cut it here for the day, and I again do apologize for the rockiness of the show. I thought my laptop was charged, and it wasn't. That's what I get for assuming, right? but. Yeah. Anyway, you guys know all the platforms you can find me on. I'm going to start adding people who are from different viewpoints. I'm going to try adding some liberals and see what they say.
Yes.
And start adding some Democrats and some neocons and all that good stuff. And see if we can get some good substantial debates on the Facebook page here. It'll be interesting. The next few weeks. So I will be back with you guys next week. And thank you all for listening.
Hey, I just want to say one thing before we sign off. Noah's with us again today. And he's really well-behaved in the studio. Shan had to give him an eye look once or twice. But, you know, it's awful tough sitting in one spot for an hour. And I think next time I'm going to have him sit up here with me so he can see the computer and show him some different things. So he may want to grow up to be in radio. So thank you, son. Appreciate you being here, Noah. And Shan, thank you.
Yeah. No, thank you.